What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
All right, I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley. A fresh suit. That dude?
Yes, sir.
All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself, the most fearless show in sports. Coming up, we'll sit down with one of Kyrie Irving's new teammates and good friends, Spencer Dinwiddie. And 1 hour from now, I'll tell you why the NFLPA is making a mistake going to war with the league. But we start today in Pittsburgh. All right, Mike Tomlin can't say it, but he believes the 2019 Pittsburgh Steelers will embody the coaching cliche, addition by subtraction. Let me say it another way. Tomlin is thrilled Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell are someone else's problem. Thrilled, tickled pink, elated. Happy as Khloe Kardashian at a Summer League postgame party.
Man.
Tomlin can coach his team away from the noise and dysfunction of Bell's salary demands and rap career and Brown's toxic envy of Juju Smith-Schuster's growing relationship with quarterback Ben Roethlisberger. Ben, Brown, Bell, Tomlin might all one day team up again on the greatest football team, the one housed in Canton, Ohio, at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But they needed to be separated in Pittsburgh. The Steelers underachieved last season. After a 7-2-1 start, they self-destructed, lost the AFC North to the one-dimensional Baltimore Ravens, and missed the playoffs for the first time in 5 years. Tomlin's coaching seat is now warm. It will be on fire if the Steelers don't unseat the Ravens and hold off the rapidly improving Cleveland Browns this season. In an interview with ESPN's Jeremy Fowler, Tomlin indicated he's built for the pressure he's facing this season. And if you really parse his words, he further indicates he's glad Bell and Brown now work in New York and Oakland. Tomlin told Fowler, "I shaped my reputation in this business and this outlook in this business being singularly focused on the task at hand. So I'd be kidding you if I told you I had a certain edge because of what happened in 2018. I just have a certain edge, and I embrace that element of it." All right, let me translate what he's saying. "I'm built for combat. You can turn up the heat on my seat. It won't change me. I go into every season thinking they'd love to fire me." Tomlin also said, "I acknowledge that there are some significant changes, but talking about it is not going to dictate the outcome. You want to hear a lot of bold predictions, or you won't hear a lot of bold predictions from us. That is not our style. That is not appropriate. We know that we are judged based on performance anyway." Let me translate that. "Brown and Bell are gone. Good riddance. Now this team can fully reflect my personality. We're about this work, not the noise. Come holler at me in January when we're in the playoffs." Mm. I love it. It's the right attitude. I don't believe it's false bravado. What's been holding the Steelers back from reaching their full potential and experiencing postseason success has been the lack of connection between Roethlisberger and Tomlin. They haven't been in the same foxhole. Tomlin had too many Hall of Fame, disparate alpha personalities to manage. It was impossible to create order and a cohesive team personality. Tomlin's confidence is a byproduct of the head coach and the quarterback being on the same page. It couldn't happen with Bell and Brown on the roster. Tomlin's glad they're gone, and the Steelers will be better for it. All right, joining the desk now, Fox Sports NFL analyst Sean Merriman and LeVar Arrington. Marcel, start with you. You believe he's happy AB and Le'Veon Bell are gone?
No, not a chance in this world is he happy that he lost that talent, that level of talent on his roster. I mean, coaches know that there are two major priorities in terms of what their job is. It's one, to get the most out of that talent, whatever level that is, and two, to manage those personalities, whatever they are. And it's an indictment on Mike Tomlin for him not being able to manage those personalities to a place where he can make them feel like this is a culture where you would take less to be here, i.e. the New England Patriots. No, he's not the owner. No, he's not the GM. No, he's not the capologist. But he can make it such a place where those guys say, a little less is worth being a Pittsburgh Steeler. So that's a strike on his resume. He feels that. That's why he's not happy they're going. Two, you're the jockey in this situation. You need the horses. And boy, did I lost some thoroughbreds out there. And you can get into
horses can't be tamed.
Look, you
they still run fast.
That's still true. Yeah. That's still true. But at the same time, these are guys who were Steelers, who bought in, and then it went awry. And he has to feel some of that is on him. Now, we could go out there in a story and narrative and start saying addition by subtraction. Because my therapist always tells me there's a difference between the haves and have-nots and how they explain their worlds. The have-nots always have to have a story of why they don't have. Mm. And this is a situation where you just gave him a story, but he ain't really feeling that. Trust me, we've been have-nots. And we understand what that feels like when you want something and you lost something and you realize, I'll make do. I'll do the best I can, but that's still not ideal. That's still not what he wishes. He wishes those guys were in that locker room, happy with that culture, and still in a roster, but they're going to have to make do.
You know, it depends on what their ultimate goal was. Is that to get rid of the headache and gain control of the locker room again? And yes, he's happy. If that's to replace this production, no. And as you said, there's no way of doing it. You know, Antonio Brown, first in receptions, first in receiving yards, first in touchdowns, most by a player in NFL history in a six-year span.
Last in Super Bowls.
You know, that's fine. That's fine. But you know what? Go find another player in the market right now who can put up these stats. You can't.
Hello.
You can't.
What?
Whit, come on now. No. Let's see. 6 years,
Irv? We'll see.
Let's see Juju be the number one wide receiver and get anywhere close to these numbers this year. If that's the case, I can't wait to see it.
Let's see AB get those numbers with the Raiders.
I think AB, if he doesn't get those numbers, he's going to be very close to it again because his athletic ability and what he's capable of doing on the field, he can do it. They can say whatever they want, right? I mean, they're getting rid of these, you know, Le'Veon Bell, they're getting rid of AB. Ben Roethlisberger might be a little happy because he don't have to go back and forth. You know, his players on the team might not be happy, but as a head coach, the only thing that matters is your wins and losses. So I don't. Can he be happier going forward with these two gone? There's no way in hell. There's no way in hell. You're more happy with the two best players in the National Football League at their positions gone on your football team.
Marcellus Wiley mentioned the New England Patriots. When have the New England Patriots had the most elite players at different positions outside of their quarterback?
Receiver 1 year.
Okay, so, and he was a
tight end.
Passes. Okay, Gronkowski. Yeah, that's fair.
So, we weren't adding
think about this. You say it's an indictment on him, and it's something that puts him on the seat and warms up the seat. But when you really think about it, at some point, he did wish for it to work. At some point, he was not happy that they were not where they needed to be. But now, today, he's definitely happy that they're leaving. And I'm going to tell you why. Why does he need to feel like he's being indicted on the way that he managed those personalities in Pittsburgh? Now you can look at Connor. You can look at Schuster. Maybe they're not as elite as Bell and Brown. But you have guys that are going to fit into the model and the mode of what that coach is bringing to the table. Furthermore, if you're looking at it from the perspective of, and I'm from Pittsburgh, I know how Once the hype machine gets going in WPXI on the Washington or the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and in the Tribune Review, shouts out to Mike White. When those things take place, right, it's not on the field anymore.
Okay.
The minute you lose a game, it's because of Le'Veon Bell. It's because of Antonio Brown, right? This team has always been able to overcome adversity with running backs, and with receivers. They've always developed running backs and receivers. Noel had Franco and had Swan and Stallworth. Your boy Cowher had Jerome Bettis and had Hines Ward, all right? Now Mike Tomlin has Connor and Schuster. Nobody is going to think back to Brown and Le'Veon Bell after this season.
They fooled themselves by saying that. You're trying to compare James Connor to Le'Veon Bell because if he had a short-term your success.
Small window.
Yeah, small window. So you're trying to compare. So they're fooling themselves because they wanted them gone so bad. They wanted them gone so bad. So
you don't have to compare. You don't have to compare it. That's a system. Most NFL teams are just NFL teams. They're not franchises. You know, the difference between a franchise like McDonald's and Mr. Old Joe's Go Get Waffles in a burger shop is they have systems in place. Once that system is in place, you can plug and play. John Connor doesn't have to be compared James Connor, I get into the Terminator. Once you get into that plug and play system where it works, People would have thought that this team would have fell apart after Jerome Bettis and Hines Ward walked away. It didn't. People would have thought that the team fell apart after Jason Gilden and Joey Porter and Potsy, James Ferrier went away. It didn't. You bring a guy in like James Harrison, becomes a Hall of Famer. It is a system, a franchise. Most teams would be destroyed, devastated by losing those type of players.
LeVar, that was an amazing story.
Thank you.
And I don't want to be confused in my love for Mike Tomlin, the coach. Second most wins as an active coach, so we know he's a great coach. Whatever you want to go with story. But let's go back with this happy story that we're trying to sell right here. And here's the problem with it, and you can't even answer this. And if you can,
let's
please.
See.
Last year, they lost the latter part of the season, lost their opportunity to go to the playoffs. 7-2 team, 7-2-1, all of a sudden no playoffs. And a lot of that blame went on the two guys who exited, right? Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown.
Okay.
Well, let's breathe, brother. Le'Veon wasn't there one play last year.
That's part of the problem.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
And according to Stork, but they were 7-2-1, so something was getting fooled. They were getting diluted into something.
Right.
And then second of all, supposedly one guy had one foot out the door. All I'm saying is you're addressing a lot of the symptoms, but not the illness, because there's one thing that was in that locker room last year that is going to reside again this year, and it hasn't been properly labeled. We keep saying, oh, it's those guys. One guy was not even here, and the other guy was halfway in, and you're saying that, oh, everything's fixed? I'm saying, have you addressed the illness? Whatever that offensive line was doing in the beginning of the season that really tore that team apart in terms of talking about someone else's money. Yep. The lack of leadership. All these young guys who now have to step up into bigger roles. We keep talking about who left, but they weren't even there. So if you can address that, now you fixed your illness.
I'm going to address it. Okay. Again, I tried to address it in the deal.
Mm.
Ben Roethlisberger is the common denominator.
Mm.
Ben Roethlisberger, I was one of the first to say it, bad leader. I believe these exits have given Roethlisberger and Mike Tomlin a chance to get on the same page. That's necessary. Their connection had become unhealthy, and I believe it's healthier now, and that's why I believe Tomlin is confident right now, and I don't – he's not thumping his – he will thump his chest come January, I think, because I think they're going to have success, because he had now has a chance, he and the quarterback, to be on the same page – and for Tomlin's voice to ring more authentic in that locker room. It's hard to come down on your team and discipline your team when AB is so damn unreliable and does his own thing, and he beats to his own drum and does it and just undermines your voice of authority. And then you had Le'Veon Bell, I'm just telling you, who again, wasn't really, his personality is hard to manage, just one of his financial demands. He wants to be a rapper, he wants to be bigger than football. Some of that's away, and it's back to basics, and I think it's going to work.
But, Whit, you said one of the biggest things in Ben Roethlisberger. Just recently, I think for the first time, we heard him kind of be neutral. He came out and said the things he should have said when A.B. and Le'Veon Bell was there.
Yeah.
I also feel that he's feeling some of that heat now.
Yes.
That he has to step up even more than he has in the past because he doesn't have these guys there. You talk about Ben Roethlisberger, he could have fixed this thing a long time ago. Okay, they're gone, whatever the case is. Juju with his guy, they want to make him the one wide receiver. All this is going to fall back on Tomlin. Like I said, Ben Roethlisberger is not and has never taken the blame for anything that's happened in that organization. He's never come out.
He just did this offseason.
Because he had to. He got no other choice.
Yeah, how genuine is it?
How genuine is it?
You know what's funny? That your explanation of this situation is a single person's mindset. And trust me, I've been single. And trust me, I've had a lot of therapy to get me converted from single to a married man's mindset. When you're single, somebody
happy come up. Man's mindset, but go ahead.
Okay, do you? Vegas this weekend. You want to switch? A single person's mindset, when somebody come up to you and y'all had issues and broke up, what happened? And the first thing a single person says is, they were tripping. And it's funny, these Steelers right now sound single as hell. Oh, Le'Veon. Oh, AB. And you know what the funny thing is? Your job as a great leader, if you're a leader, Roethlisberger and Tomlin, is no matter who in the hell's in that locker room, we find a way. Because your game plan is not just X's and O's. It's I's and U's. It's managing people. And now we're going to say, we got rid of the star players. We're better. Are you a better leader?
You got guys who are just gonna fall in line. That's not leadership. The only problem with your explanation is removing influential figures. That's what you have to add to it. You're removing influential people. Influencers in the locker room can divide a locker room. All right. Now, you're talking about Ben Roethlisberger. Ben Roethlisberger is not going to be the same type of influencer, and we all on stage understand what I'm saying, is not going to be the same type of influencer that Le'Veon Bell and AB is going to be, right? They're not. So by removing that element and knowing that you have an emerging star in Juju Schuster and Connor, whether he ends up being as big as Le'Veon or not, it does not matter because he fits the bill of what they need of the mold of player. Did John L. Williams fit? Did Bam Morris fit the mold? Did those guys fit the mold? Probably not. But you, did Warren Williams fit the mold? They fit the mold well enough to get the Steelers to where they needed to be with what they had with their system. So by removing those guys, you have, in essence, did what Witt is talking about, which is brought the team to a point of where you don't have somebody internally in that locker room that is actually making this side of the locker room, this side of the locker room, and this side of the locker room feel a certain type of way.
One, you remove your two most productive players, exactly. And one of them is your most – the hardest working player,
yep,
as testified from all the other players. That's in fair. AB. And Ben Roethlisberger started this gangster beef between them. When Ben Roethlisberger threw an interception to a defensive lineman and blamed AB for the route, that was not AB using his influence in a negative fashion. That became him having to respond because you trying to take an attack at somebody on your
you're
level.
You're jumping on one moment in time that created, and maybe that very well is true.
Oh, it's snowballed from
that,
there.
Right, but the bottom line is, how do you address where you are right now?
I'm just saying there's only one. You can't get rid of the quarterback. Mm-mm. Quarterbacks are too hard to find.
I'm with you, brother.
This is their only path, and I think y'all are doing Tomlin and Big Ben a disservice by suggesting they haven't taken blame for the failures in the past. I believe they have. Now,
I'm not saying Tomlin, but Ben.
Ben. No, absolutely.
I believe they have, and I think they have an opportunity this year to set the record straight and be better, and I think it's going to happen.
On the field.
We're joined now by Brooklyn Nets point guard Spencer Dinwiddie.
And?
And?
Your neighbor.
What do you mean? Who? Oh, that's, my neighbor.
Damn, you forget your homies, don't you? Oh, you don't forget your neighbor.
Yeah, Spencer, we live in the same place.
Yes, sir.
Spencer, great to have you here. You've done some recruiting this offseason. You were instrumental in the Kyrie Kevin Durant saga.
Mm-hmm.
Your relationship with Kyrie, where did that start? How instrumental were you?
I mean, it actually started because we played against each other in high school, and St. Patrick's killed Taft High School. We reconnected All-Star Break 2018 and just talked as friends, really. I mean, there's been so much made of this situation, but, you know, if your friend asks you questions about your team or your situation or your contract or things like that, you're going to answer them authentically. So it's less so like I was pitching Kyrie all summer or season or whatever it is that, hey, you got to come to the Nets, you know, because when he had made the Boston comments in preseason, I took him at face value and he meant them. So it wasn't all on me.
Yeah, but you said Kyrie started talking about playing in New York City in December, and I ain't got the schedule in front of me, but I think that's like in the season still. So how did you take that and what was that conversation about?
Well, what he said, it was in reference to my contract extension. And he said, New York might be fun next year. So he didn't say, I'm going to New York next
year. Yeah, I'm listening.
You know, so with that being said, I just took it at that. He, you know, he's kind of cryptic sometimes. It is what it is. Like, maybe it was, obviously free agency was on his mind. I mean, how couldn't it be? It was,
yeah.
He was coming up into free agency. It's a big year for him. He was super focused on season at the time still. He wanted Boston to make a run, obviously. So there's a lot of things that was going on through his mind. And we talked about a myriad of different topics.
Listen, you're a point guard. He plays, likes to dominate the ball. There was no fear of that for you in terms of your development and your role in Brooklyn when you start talking about bringing a Kyrie Irving on the team?
Not at all. To date in the league, I played with great PGs. You know, I played with Brandon Jennings before he was hurt, played with Reggie Jackson. He had obviously a spectacular year, got him the $80 million contract, played with D'Lo during his All-Star year, played with Jeremy Lin. Unfortunately, he got hurt, and now Kyrie. I mean, obviously Kyrie has the best resume of the five of them, but I want to win. And so adding a talent like Kyrie and also subsequently KD only helps us as a group. And so I believe, you know, part of growing and getting better is being able to test yourself against the best, whether that's, you know, competition or on the same team. And I envision playing with them.
Now, you guys had great chemistry last year, which led to your success. Kyrie's situation in Boston, they were brewing, things were going well, and then last year occurred and didn't go so well. Any fear of the chemistry issues that may happen if Kyrie is now on the squad?
You know, obviously the Boston situation is what it was, and I wasn't in that locker room, so I can't comment on that specifically. But for us, I feel like we all have a vested interest in seeing this go well, right? And I made comments about that in the past, too. I took less than a contract extension to stay because I believe we would build something that we could win. If I start acting crazy, then it makes no sense. I should have just left and got more money, right? If he's going to come home and put the city on his back, per se, right? Then he's got a vested interest in making this go well. If KD's going to come and play with his friends, you know, and not stay with the Warriors, then he has a vested interest in going well. Everybody across the board has, you know, a tie into this that maybe is a little bit more than just, oh, well, Brooklyn offered me a max deal. I'm just going to go there and we'll see what happens.
Spencer, Kyrie's reputation is he's quirky.
Yeah.
That's one way to describe it. Makes the flat earth comments. Now, great player, now on his third team.
Yeah.
What do you know about Kyrie and his personality that perhaps we don't know, the public doesn't know? Is quirky a proper description?
I don't know an NBA player that's not quirky to some extent. I truthfully don't. That's including myself, because sometimes I think I'm the only sane person left on Earth, which would probably make me pretty quirky, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
There it goes. So,
right.
No, with him, though, he's got a big heart for his family. He's very driven to be a master at his craft. And, you know, he's a pretty authentic person, too. So, you know, with all those things, I mean, I'm excited to be his teammate. And we haven't had a situation to date over the last, you know, what, year and a half or so, where we've really bumped heads or really had too much, I guess, disagreement. So we'll see how it goes. Obviously, we haven't been on the same team yet, but I'm excited.
Now, how has your background shaped your journey? You're from L.A. like myself, got on that yellow bus all the way to Taft High School, wasn't a one and done, a superstar collegiate player. And now look at you, man, one of the best players, especially in the reserve role coming off the bench. How has that shaped you, that road?
It's built the work ethic. It's built the mental toughness, you know, and the conviction to say what I feel and stand behind it and not be afraid of the backlash. You know, to your point, like I wasn't at any point in time considered to be the best player, right? But, you know, to fight off being in the G League and coming back and last year, what, averaged 17-5, one of the best 6 men in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I made the comments before the season that nobody could guard me and everybody laughed at me. And was like a top 3 ISO player in the league. So, you know, if looking at all that stuff is just, hey, I am who I am. I intend to be, you know, one of the most dynamic people on our roster. And I'm looking forward to trying to win as many games as possible.
I heard you and Marcellus whispering before we got on air. Your mom, a college professor at USC.
Yeah.
What influence has she had on you?
Big time influence. Academics were always first in our household.
Yes.
That's why Harvard was my second choice in college.
Harvard was?
Yeah.
Should have went.
Yeah. My top 3 were Colorado, Harvard, and UCLA. Those were my top 3. I credit my parents for letting an 18-year-old kid make his own decision and go to Pac-12 because he had dreams of going to the NBA. When most probably would have forced me to go to Harvard, right? But it's by far, academics were number 1. Mom stressed that. Still scared of her to this day.
Love it.
Hey, Kevin Durant, we've been spent a lot of time talking about Kyrie. Kevin Durant also joining the Brooklyn Nets. And Kevin, Kyrie, and DeAndre, according to the narrative, are all friends.
Yeah.
And the friendship was a part of their decision to join up and all go to Brooklyn together. Any concern that three outsiders, and again, they're now your teammates, though, are going to come in and a new dynamic, a new chemistry in the locker room with these three guys playing such an important role. Any fear of that or this whole friendship movement in the NBA, your thoughts?
I would say the friendship movement probably stems from AAU, right? Because it's not like, hey, I'm the top person from California now and I'm going to put my city on my back and now I have beef with all other states, right? And demographics, right? You're getting to play all of these elite players at 10, 12, 14 years old. And so you kind of grow up together too, with social media also making the world smaller. So
is this good for the NBA?
I mean, I don't think it's bad. It's part of life. Things progress, things change. You know, I mean, we're not going to see the same type of beef probably that we used to in the old days, but.
But same kind of competition.
Well,
AAU competitions.
There's still a lot of rivalries that go on in the NBA. It's just not publicized as much because a lot of people don't want to disrupt their, you know, forward-facing image. You know, because if you're the only guy in the NBA fighting everybody, then you're crazy. But if the whole NBA is fighting, then you're normal, right? So I can't go out there and be like, oh, I hate this player and that player and that player and that player and that player, because then I'm going to be looked at as this wild card and it's harder for me to get a job.
Now, broke that one down. the story goes that KD and Kyrie were a package deal the whole way. Belief in that?
As I heard it when it originally started, yes, that's what I heard. But as it got to, not the 11th hour, but let's say like the 9th and 10th hour, I heard Kyrie was coming, you know? And he was very firm in that decision. And then it was all about whether KD was going to join him or not.
Quickly, medical prognosis is one thing, player prognosis is a different thing. You're looking at KD and that Achilles, when y'all expecting him back?
I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, don't do that. See, you KD, over that. You covering up because you know you about to lie.
No.
Don't do that.
Hey, whenever KD comes back, he comes back, whether that's this year, next year. We feel like we're capable of being one of the elite teams in the league when he does. And prior to him coming back, we still feel like we're one of the upper echelon teams in the East.
You lasted that long without going PR. Look at PR.
Thank you, Spencer. I'll see you back on the Wilshire Corridor. Good luck next season.
Ballers, all right.
Joined now by Redskins Pro Bowl cornerback Josh Norman. Josh, welcome back. Let's start with the jumping of the Bulls. I don't know if you read the Washington Post. Washington Post, none too happy with you, Josh. Redskins have a dearth of veterans. The headline was, Norman, 31, behaves as if he's bored with football and ready to retire, but the money is too good to leave. Last year, he danced with the stars. This year, he was dancing around Bulls in Spain. Norman's recklessness shows a lack of commitment to football. Norman should be readying to lead a unit, not working on his bucket list. Your response.
My response. That was like a heated loaded question, right?
Yeah. Very.
Yeah.
But that's Rick. That's when
Rick Mace, is that Rick. Who wrote that?
Whoever wrote it. Rick, I just saw down there.
Oh, Rick Snyder. I'm sorry, Rick Snyder.
Whoever he was. Yeah. But literally, like, ask yourself a question. Does Rick Snyder write my checks?
No, Dan Snyder does.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. I'll try to figure out like that part, right?
Dan Snyder has no problem.
So why should I worry about Rick? Snyder.
Well, let's be real, man. There's a camp out there, and the camp is getting more fuel that fame has become as or more important than football. They use moments like this to fuel the argument. And when they look at you and they look at the unit and they look at the investment, they're starting to try to find the balance and trying to reconcile it. So has fame creeped into the same level as football for you?
Let's see. I don't come to other people's jobs to tell them what to do.
All right. That's an argument. But if you did,
you know what I'm saying?
If you did, you might have something to say about how they do their job, and they're flipping that on you.
Yeah, right. They're flipping it on me because of what I do and what I make. So if I was somebody that didn't make what I made, guess what? It wouldn't be a conversation, would it? Would it not be? Or would it be?
Not just what you make, but your level of game. How good you are comes with a responsibility. Sometimes it's just a perception. We get it. But are you giving them even that perception? But that football is all.
But that's the thing, man. People's perception is their reality. And that can be whatever it is. But for me, mine is I'm going to do what I feel like doing in that moment of time because it's fun for me. It's a thrill. It's something that excites me so intense it makes me better. Like, it prepares me on a different level than it prepares for other people. Like, I grew up, I lived on the edge all my life. I played this position on the edge, just me and mono one-on-one. Mm. I'm looking danger straight in the eye every time I step up on that field. 16 straight games. I know what that looks like. It's no fear factor for me. So when I step inside someone else in another octagon, or another arena, another space, I'm somebody totally different. I feel that. I'm excited. Like something just jumps up inside of me and exudes that confidence that I can overcome anything, any fear that I step into. And that's for me. I can't explain that enough to somebody else to where that resonates to them because they don't understand it and they not me.
I think you just gave a great explanation.
I was about to say, that's all you need.
You gave a great explanation about your personality, but it does lead to the other question. It's like, does that same excitement still drive you on the football field? Do you feel that same level of excitement still as a football player?
Well, for me, I was out there pretty much in Spain testing out my booster package that I just got this season for the season. So literally, it was something that it was fun for me. So I always look at it as what's fun for me. And football is still fun for me. It's still something that I love. It's brought me into a place where I'm fortunate enough and I'm very blessed to be able to do what I do, man. There's so many people in this world that wants to play professional sports. And do what we do, so many. But for me, I take it as, where's the love for the game? And do I have that? Absolutely, without an undeniable question, yes, for sure. Yeah. But if I wanna do something else on my free time, I can do it, like literally. I mean, I stand up right now, look at me. Like, do you see any broken bones? Like, you see, I'm here talking to you. I'm full health, right? So why is there a problem or issue, I feel like? And it seems like to me, if I do something, oh, you're not into football. Oh, you're not into that or this. Okay, so when you leave your job, what are you into? Are you gonna be the same way?
All right. I think you've given a hell of an answer. We're gonna move on to NFL's talking about an 18-game schedule.
Yes.
Your thoughts?
What about it?
Would you be for or against playing 18 games?
No.
No what?
Why would I? Do you know how much more, like, impact that is on you? Do you know, like, that's another, you know, two games, which is you add that up, 16 you already played, and then luckily enough you go to playoffs, that's three extra games, and then you go to the big one, that's four, that's, you look at it, almost 20 games, right? 19, yeah. 20 games.
Yeah.
You add two more on top of that. You tell me what's the risk factor in that, injury or none?
Is there a dollar amount that can make your mind change?
But see, that's the conversation. Is it guaranteed dollar amount, or is it a dollar amount to where if something happens, they can take that away? Now, for me, that's a question I ask myself. It'd be totally different. But for other people, you got to get all those guys on the same page to have that conversation to be like, hey, look, is this worth that other two games? But I guarantee you one thing, they're going to take away this stupid preseason. That's for sure. They have to.
What do you think about them limited 18 games, but you're limited to playing in 16?
Say it again, Wayne.
They play 18 games.
Yeah.
What are they saying?
But the player, individual player, can only play 16 of them.
Then get out of here. You think that's going to actually go?
I don't.
I don't either. No. So
why would you be against that?
What you mean? They say we play 18, but you play 16.
You're sitting on the sideline basically for two games getting money.
Watching it. Yeah. Just banking in your bank account. And people are actually going to show up in the stands to watch their favorite players sit on the sideline while everybody else play. You think that's going to fly?
No, I'm not with that.
I'm just saying. I'm asking the question.
Yeah.
I mean, help me understand that one.
Well, okay. Well, we all know about your rivalry. Maybe it's not the same right now. OBJ no longer in the New York spotlight in Cleveland. Here you go. How do you think OBJ going to
do? Don't hide. Yeah. You've been honest about everything else.
And he's in OBJ.
What's hiding, man? Young guys, see, we do this. We ask me this question every time. Why we can't ask about Julio? Why we can't ask about this?
Because you didn't take Julio's helmet off. We ain't got this video with you and Julio.
We went to the Super Bowl, man. We was one step away from a touchdown from being the champions. why we got to come up here and have a conversation every time.
Amen.
I keep telling you
what?
About the situation. He's a great player. He does his job. He knows what he's supposed to do. Guess what? He played a game that was violent back then. We played a game that was just, it was Batman and the Joker. It was carnage. It was really chaos. I mean, everything was coming down. We put fire to Gotham. That's what we did. And it still resonates to this day. Damn it, leave it alone.
No, we're going to keep
watching.
He's
gone now, though.
I see that.
He's in the AFC.
He's gone. He's not even in the NFC East anymore. Like, he left. He's completely gone away from the NFC.
You think he's going to miss you?
Do we? Yes, he probably will. But no, it's all fun and games. Like, it's jokes. We can laugh about it now. I mean, we had conversations about it. It was like, man, we were so young and, you know, I was doing some crazy things back then. Okay, I understand. We get it. We both on the same playing field. We want to win. I get it. I get it. You get two people that's just like at the peak of the game and they going at each other. I get it. But now it's got to a point where it's like, all right, he's in another place. He's playing with Cleveland. They got a crazy team over there.
Squad,
you
right?
See that?
Yeah.
I mean, if they all on the same page, because they got a lot of personnel, if they all get on the same page, who knows what may happen.
Y'all have a personal relationship, you and Odell?
Do we have a personal relationship?
You heard me, so that means no. I'll say no.
You want to phone? We kind of got a little conversation. We got a contact. We got contact with each other. How about that? We got contact. So
y'all got a referee.
Is in his contact.
Okay.
I say that.
Okay.
So my phone number's in his phone and his is in mine. Vice versa. How about
the NFL has got some new replay provisions as it relates to pass interference.
Yeah.
I've heard Aaron Rodgers say that I think he thinks it's going to be a help for defensive backs. He thinks it's going to be to their advantage, the replay, the pass interference replay. Your thoughts?
I don't see how. How would it be into our advantage? I mean, I get it. Yes, it would be into our advantage, but then again, how could it? Because you get it in a two-minute situation, the fourth quarter, you know, game's locked, and you make a big play, and you do something to the wide receiver that you get in front of him. You might not even touch him that much to impede his positioning of where he's going on the field. You may just tap him by or something. Is that call for a flag, or are they going to let that go? You know what I'm saying? What is going to be?
I don't
because, like literally, I had to play, and me and Hop at the end of the game, it was like almost like a 2-minute situation, and I didn't really do anything to him. The guy came from all the way back from the left side of that field and threw a flag, and the play was over. And he called holding on me, and the play went to the other side. So I'm looking at that like, how did that even go down? But was I upset? Of course I was upset. 2-3 games later, it went out of my system. But I would just say the same thing happened with the Saints.
The Rams and Saints.
And yep. Really, that's really why we're having this conversation right now, if we want to be honest with you.
Well, thank you, Josh.
For being honest with us.
Yeah, respect.
Hey.
Good luck this season.
No more bulls.
All right, you want to party like a football star? Ooh. On Saturday at the one and only Dre's Beach Club on the Las Vegas Strip, you can join Ty Dolla $ign, that dude, Marcellus Wiley, and the entire Speak for Yourself crew at the pool party of the summer. For tickets or more information, visit dresgroup.com. Mm. All right, welcome back. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself, the most fun you can have talking sports. Whitlock and Wiley, Sean Merriman and LeVar Arrington are back. Time to get antisocial. Yeah. Uh-oh. Beach Club ready, Darnell.
Oh.
I can't wait.
First time, baby.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Yeah. Oh,
they're back.
Going to sleep in that.
Biceps or hamstrings?
Call it what you want.
His arms
he got thighs
up.
On his arms.
Hard work right there.
Oh, yeah. He ain't going to make it a pull sock, though. You will not see Ty Dolla $ign. I guarantee it.
Well, what?
He's going to be knocked out.
Like, all right, guys, I'm going back to the room. I see
you. He's going to be able to sleep on one of them speakers.
What's popping?
I think it's something in the air, Whitlock, Marcellus.
What you smell?
I smell some smoke. It's time for the smoke detector. It's been a while.
Right, right.
So yesterday, you guys talked about Marcus Morris firing his agent, Rich Paul, after a controversial free agency. Morris had a deal on the table with the Clippers and didn't take it.
Mm.
The speculation out there that Rich Paul stopped Morris from signing with the Clippers because he was protecting LeBron.
Aye.
Well, apparently, that's not true. Mm. Marcus's twin brother, Markeith, responded on Twitter saying, Richie P told Moot to do what?
What?
These stories be crazy. Rich would never tell Moot not to go to L.A. because of LeBron.
Mm.
Marcus himself then responded, coming back at both Catino Mobley and Whitlock, just for talking about this speculation, saying, quote, Catino don't know me at all. Neither do you, Whitlock. You're not speaking facts, so stop acting like you know.
Oh!
Marcellus.
Yes.
What level of smoke is this?
It was three people talking, and two of them got called out. So this is something. That wet match is certainly, we're going to put that out the side. We're going to get off of that. It ain't scorched earth because he didn't say Temecula. He didn't say meet me. He didn't say let's go do this, so grease fire. He don't want them problems, huh, Whitlock? So I'm going to drop out of scorched earth and grease fire with bonfire. Just the fact that he called y'all out by name. Grease fire, I'm sorry. No. That's bonfire right there.
Bonfire.
Bonfire. Yeah, I'm going level
bond
two.
Spitfire.
Bond spit fire.
There you go.
Here's the thing. Whitlock. Catino know the game, and he was like, you don't know me. And then Whitlock, you covered him. Talking about he cut from a different cloth. He a different dude. Respect. He smashed that. He got the scissors out on that,
Marcellus.
Dog.
Marcellus.
So overreaction.
It's a wet match, Whit.
No.
You can't call him out and say the nickname of your brother, Mook.
He don't know Mook.
Wet match.
Hold
right
on,
there,
no.
Wet
no.
match.
Whenever you at somebody.
That's the at. When you at them and say, listen, I want to clear this right now. At. You ever hear people say, don't at me? Yeah. Oh, he at you.
He at you.
He used his brother's nickname. My brother's nickname is Pooh. I would not try to bring the smoke and say my older brother's name, Pooh. You don't know Pooh, Whit.
Delicious. Pooh. Hey.
You don't call a grown man by that name when you're trying
Delicious.
To put smoke.
Sorry.
I'm going to say
sorry.
I was very disappointed with the tweet. You know, me and the Morris brothers have shot dice numerous times.
See, I thought y'all knew each other.
We do. I covered them in college.
You don't know me.
We don't know us.
Somebody's not telling the truth. Somebody is speaking facts.
I'm going to take his word at it that he believes that Rich Paul and LeBron had nothing to do with him not going to the Clippers. He set the record straight. I got no problem with that.
What got lost in all this fire
is him saying Mook.
That I told the truth, that I'm the one that broke that down. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so can I get my prayer? Can I get some credit?
Well, again, you weren't at it.
He ain't about to add me.
Bonfire.
I'm going to be for real.
That was real.
Morris twins, they about that life.
Oh, I know. You good.
Hey, we got suits on, but so are we.
I'm good.
I'm remotely scared.
Far east side.
Anyway. Far east side. Decent dice shooters, too. All right, we got to move to the next one. We're going long here.
All right, man. So guess who's back in the headlines again? Yeah. Aisha Curry. Mm. This video of Aisha doing a Millie Rock went viral all over social media yesterday. And I ain't the best dancer myself, so I know a bad Millie Rock when I see one, and that was it. Twitter trolls were all over this, taking shots at her moves, and Steph was obviously tired of it, decided to step in and defend her. Take a listen.
Slow news day today, I see, huh? Just make sure y'all send me the video of you dancing at your own restaurant opening.
Because we're going to keep Millie rocking until that happens. You know what I'm saying?
You guys like Steph coming back into Twitter trolls?
No. I think he needs to leave it alone. But what I mostly feel bad about, to be quite honest with you, is that Twitter has an organized problem with Aisha Curry.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
She hasn't done anything wrong here. She's on some little hit list because she's, to me, it's because she's not woke enough.
It ain't. Somebody broke it down, actually. One, it's a sad place where you can't laugh at yourself in public anymore.
Right.
Like, I want to just laugh at myself. She even, when she finished the dance, like, I know I ain't kill it, but hey,
so what?
I'm a married mama of three. That's what we do.
In front of your man.
In front of your man. Right. And somebody said that there's a lot of people out there who obviously misery loves company, ain't living their best life, and certainly ain't happy in a fulfilled relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, somebody
man
said,
ain't
there's
hit
a lot
threes.
Of 30-some-year-old women on a third relationship trying to figure out where baby daddy at that's clowning her. But whatever that population is, they got beef with Aisha.
Yes, they do.
I like that.
She never does anything malicious, man. So this is really bad that they keep attacking her this way.
But Steph need to stop responding.
Because
all he's doing is letting them know that they feel it.
I mean, you are the biggest basketball player in the world.
Look at him rocking back and forth. They together.
I'm more conspiratorial, obviously. That's one of my issues. And I'm just telling you, the Aisha Curry thing is organized. The anti-Aisha Curry thing is organized and real. There's a lane that social media tries to put us in. And when I say us, I'm talking about black people. And she's not in that league. No, I'm just telling you, you have to be more ratchet than she is.
Yeah.
Cardi B will get all the love over social media.
That was my point.
Because they can always hold that card, though. But again, that's why. Because I can always hold that card. Cardi B, you're doing so well. You're flying privately. You're doing this. But you know what you used to do, right?
Yeah.
You know what you used to do, right? We all know what you used to do. They don't have that on her.
They don't have that on the family. So that misery loves that company, so therefore we gonna ride for you, Cardi, because we all the same. But
and I fool with Cardi, by the way. I fool with you, Cardi. I was just saying, look, that ain't her deal.
Her wife is feeling this, right. And she getting that social hate, and she's like, you could kind of help. But at the same time, all you're doing in the long term is fueling it.
It's making it.
It just makes her more endearing, though. Doesn't it make her more endearing? Like, everybody don't have to be about that.
To me, in real life.
It does in real life. It does in real life.
But social media ain't real
life. I think it's something cute about the way she is, the innocence of her.
Social media is not real life.
It's not real life.
But it is creating everyone's perception.
That is true.
And so, I'm just telling you, you got a lot of people that have no access to people that don't look like them. And they get their perception from social media. And that's why, and people hate me for this, social media, Twitter hates me for this, but it's like, it's designed to make us look ratchet.
That family's
This woman will not cooperate, neither will Steph, and she keeps taking heat for it.
Mm. They've been educated to be able to handle that.
Coming up,
reality is their deal.
Sean Merriman and LeVar Arrington are back. Let's return to the NFL, sponsored by Capital One. What's in your wallet? All right, with the CBA negotiations heating up, former Raiders CEO Amy Trash just took to the pages of The Athletic to caution NFL players against taking such a confrontational approach with the league, writing, quote, I witnessed a metamorphosis in the relationship between the league and the Players Association when DeMarie Smith took over as NFLPA director in 2009 after Gene Upshaw passed away. Every issue became an argument. That said, in my experience, protecting or advancing the interest of a party is often best achieved by working collaboratively with those with whom one is negotiating, rather than engaging in a confrontational style of negotiation. Obviously, I love this article. I love what Amy Trash said, because what I've been saying all week.
Yes,
and it's what, again, I think if we look at the agent business in our field, the agents that get the best deals tend to be the ones that have the best relationships with the TV network. Mm. It's not the ones that are always at war with them. So I just think it's a smart negotiating tactic at their level. Collaboration works better than confrontation.
Hmm. So, Amy, this is how you sound after you work for an NFL team for 30 years. and you know, it's funny that, you know, this leverage, obviously there's some pressure that's coming from the NFL side in terms of leverage and losing it in this situation. And the players don't get leverage often. We know that. We've seen the CBA. And it's amazing that she just proved to what I was saying and opposing you all week, that you can give me theory, but where does it land in reality? And it ain't no fun when the rabbit got the gun. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time I can remember in a long time that the public even says, yo, that rabbit got the gun. Mm. And these players are sitting there right now, and they're just sitting there quietly. Maybe putting up a staunch stance that says, over my dead body, we'll do this. But that's part of the negotiation play. And so many people are coming out in respect of the NFL side because that just shows how much pressure they're under. Look, we're going to get there. Obviously, we're going to get there, but a lot of things in this world, in this country especially, has been got by force more so than cooperation. And I can go down that list, but at the same time, you will have a resolution, as the NFL has always come to revolution, a resolution with a heavy fist. The NFL players finally have that opportunity, and now we want to say ceasefire?
That was a nice play on words, though, revolution. Resolution.
Let it live.
I caught that. Let it breathe.
Yeah, you know what? What I think that people need to understand is that this whole thing is a win-win situation, right? It's a win for the NFL. It's a win for the players. It's just how big that win's going to be. I think that's what it really comes down to. How big that win is going to be. The NFL and everyone else around this deal, the CBA, is saying that the players are going to get more money. Now it just depends on how much money. Yeah. Is it guaranteed? And so you ever, like, somebody got the same type of deal, and they be like, oh, how much money you got?
Yeah.
Okay, how much money you got?
Yeah.
The biggest problem is when someone asks, Are you okay with what you got, or you care what you got because of what they got? Mm. And that's what this deal is going to come down to at the end of the day. It's, there's enough money to go around. Whether it's, will they find a way to do 50-50? Will they find a way to guarantee more contracts? What TJ said the other day, health benefits or something to add on. There's going to be more money. It's really just going to come down to whether the players are okay with accepting, and is that a win in their book, as opposed to going and saying, we're just not going to talk. We're going to go against. We have nothing to sit down and talk about. Everybody's going to win. You know, there's no need to fight with the NFL.
I think the most interesting perspective here is rabbit with the gun and looking at what the ultimate end goal is for the players. This is probably the first time in the history of the league in itself that these guys have a fair opportunity to represent themselves. Why? Because the most brilliant aspect of the National Football League has been the branding. You brand the shield, you do not brand the player. Mm-hmm. So you've always had the idea of, this is replaceable. I see a helmet, I see shoulder pads, and I see a team name. I don't see a person.
Yeah.
Social media has now put the gun into the rabbit's hand. So the proverbial hitting the fan is basically because you have these influencers of such massive mass appeal saying that, how is it fair for us not to get what it is that we're looking for when we are the ultimate drivers of this sport? Is the owner of this franchise or that franchise going to get on social media and have the same type of draw and appeal when they say, you know what, it should be done this way. It should be looked at this way. It should be viewed this way. It's just business, right? No, you're going to look at Odell Beckham. You're going to look at Juice. You're going to look at those guys. Even us as retired guys, you're going to look at a Sean Merriman. You're going to be like, I side with him. Why? Because I relate to him. We've always been able to relate to our players. We've never been able to relate to them on the level that we have now, because back when we were kids, if I saw Marcellus or Sean or Witt on television or on the field, I had no way, unless I went to a camp, to a practice,
yeah,
to have the interaction that we're able to have at our fingertips right now. It has totally changed the game, and it has made it a more even playing field, if not lopsided, in the way of the player.
In the fake world of social media, you're right. I'll just say this. I guarantee ownership is probably a lot like me. I don't care about a rabbit having a gun. Rabbit can't shoot a damn gun. You know, shoot it in their own direction, end up shooting themselves. And that's what these players are going to do if they keep messing with that gun. All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley, joined once again by Sean Merriman,
yes,
and LeVar Arrington. We have our signed boxing gloves here.
Ooh, look at
by
that.
Manny Pacquiao and Keith Thurman.
Keith Thurman gets me. Nice. He's most beautiful.
We're all going to be in Las Vegas right, on Saturday.
Hating.
Come
hey,
see people. Us at Dre's.
Where's my gloves?
Beach Club before the
I got
fight.
Mine in the back.
So. Oh.
All right.
Knock you out with my left.
Let's switch gears.
Who will win?
Who will win? Turn, Marcellus.
I'll be out of breath in 30
don't
seconds.
Do that.
All right.
Hold the fight.
Turn to the NFL. Where running back holdouts are a big topic of conversation this offseason. Ezekiel Elliott is considering one in Dallas. And right here in L.A., Melvin Gordon announced that he has planned to hold out of training camp until he gets a new deal, a move that he says has won him the support of running backs around the league as well as his teammates.
And they're all behind me. They all got my back, and you know. But they all told me, you know what? No matter what, you know, we don't really speak on contracts. You go do it, you know, what's best for you and your family. And I'm glad I got that support from them.
You know what? I think there's a lot of sympathy for running backs around the league. Their value has been diminished by the past happy NFL. I think most of us, and particularly my generation, we all grew up idolizing running backs.
Exactly.
Walter Payton,
yep. Mm-hmm.
Jim
yep.
Brown, O.J. Simpson.
Say it. Yeah. The first
and
thing.
They were the face of the football, and now Robbie Gould, his holdout threat works better than a running back.
You got 10
mil.
Right.
Yeah.
A kicker.
I have a lot of sympathy for running backs.
Wow. You're absolutely correct. That generation is lost. When you first got onto a football field, everyone wanted to play running back. Give me the ball, let me run in the circle, and be number 32 for me. It was just, I got to be number 32 running back. And for basketball players, it was 23, and it's changed, it's shifted. But the sympathy has grown. Two reasons. One, everyone learned from Le'Veon Bell's situation last year. No one wants to be on the other side of that dispute. No one wants to be the Steelers' O-line in that situation. And two, let's just be real.
Everybody's making money. You just talk about Robbie Gould. Mm-hmm. Kickers are making money, right. setting franchise records in terms of compensation. And everyone is making money, but there's only one position where the franchise tag is going south, and it's the running back position. So just the sympathy alone is going to come, and it's going to come even heavier than before because we learned from last year in Le'Veon.
You know, I think we all got fooled by, like, the New England Patriots. Right, and what they've been able to do over this last 10 years. And throw a guy back there, you put a guy in there, he can just, you find a way to win with whoever's back there in the backfield. Well, everybody's not the New England Patriots. Mm-hmm. They have a system over there, and they had a system over there for the past two decades. I feel bad, you know, for not only running back, but in Melvin's situation in general, right? Because you have a workhorse with the Chargers aren't a better team without Melvin Gordon.
No.
They just aren't. Are they a Super Bowl team? They're a playoff team without him, no matter what. Could they get a ring? Are they a Super Bowl team? Probably that's the question I think that everybody needs to kind of answer. This is a guy who can carry the ball 20 or 25 times per game. He's a workhorse. And you can put up all the stats and numbers and things like that, but let me tell you something as a former defensive player. When you have someone as impactful as Melvin Gordon back there, you got to account for him every single play, right? So your defense and how you write up your game plan is different because Melvin Gordon's in the backfield. So you can devalue a lot of these guys all you want to because of stats, they take hits, and they start to decline after 8 years. But some guys back, Ezekiel Elliott, Le'Veon Bell, Melvin Gordon, all these, you know, these type of running backs, when they're in the backfield, they change game plans, and these guys deserve to get paid. So hopefully they can work that out.
I respect all of those opinions, but they're not a Super Bowl team with him. If you look at it in terms of how it compares.
With him or without him?
With or without him. I mean, if you look at it, LT was in that same backfield with Rivers, right? It's the same. If anything, I think that team earlier on with you guys playing was a better team than this team that they currently have.
Different team, but yeah.
Different, but I don't think that they're better. So when you look at it from that perspective, no, he doesn't. He's not that big of a differentiator to make them a Super Bowl winner or not. That's first and foremost, if we're being realistic. And I like Melvin Gordon. He's a big tenor. I'm with that. But when you look at it from the business aspect of it, business is business, all right? There are far more better quarterbacks coming into our league now than ever before, which has now led into, with this 7-on-7 culture, 7-on-7 culture has truly changed the dynamic in the face of football as it applies to every single level. Why? Because now it has developed so many amazing, dynamic, passing, prolific quarterbacks that every single team now has prolific quarterbacks. It's not, oh, we could have a guy like Trent Dilfer and just run the ball, and we could have a guy like Neil O'Donnell and just run the ball. No, it's not like those days anymore. Everybody can throw the ball, which means now you have to protect the guy that throws the ball even more. So you're paying more money to the guys that are anchors on your offensive line. Now you have to pay more money to the guys that are catching the ball, right? Then now you got to pay more money to the guys who are received or covering the guys who are receiving the ball. And then now you got to pay more money to the people who are trying to get to the guy who's throwing the ball. So it's not unfair to say that the running back's position has been devalued. It's that the evolution, the constant evolution of where this game has gone has truly diminished the value of what we saw when we saw Eric Dickerson or Peyton, Walter Payton or O.J. Simpson. It has truly changed. The dynamic of it has changed, and that's what it is.
But ask the Steelers. What was the Steelers' X factor why they didn't make the playoffs last year? My opinion is because they didn't have Le'Veon Bell. If you have Le'Veon Bell in that backfield, he's good for one or two games.
Yeah.
His production, what he's capable of doing, and it's, you know, just how many things he can do on the field, you can put him at a slot wide receiver. You can catch the ball out the backfield. He would have won one or two games. They would have been the playoff team last year. So you have him back there in a different team.
That is a dynamic running back. There are very few dynamic Marshall Faulk is a dynamic running back. Jerome Bettis would not make it in – love you, Bus – would not make it in today's NFL based around how NFL teams are running their offenses.
Well, a little pushback. Lamar Jackson says thank you. Every quarterback can throw because now we have the jury's still out on that one, even though I think he can.
He can throw the ball.
Oh, he can throw the ball. You're right. The 7-on-7 youth level mixed with the metrics of it's simple as this, and I love running back. I played running back in college. I was a collegiate running back. Let me tell you this. The smart people just started to say, hey, I'd rather throw a short pass than have a long run. And a short pass, we know it as defenders. Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, when they back there, I'm like, this ain't going to be the game to get all them sacks, you know, just right. because, doom.
It's gone.
And it's 6 yards versus a running back has to work, and yep. everyone has worked. We got 5 yards. It is just simple mathematics that has devalued this position.
Uncle Jimmy is here.
Better believe.
Looks like your pool party ready.
with them chucks on? Got on some chucks with
in its efficiency.
In a Mai Tai. Huh?
You got, get about your big dummy of the day so we can keep it moving.
All right, man, listen, big yeah. dummy of the day.
What you got on?
Go to the big dummy, who I thought he asked the tough questions. You mean to tell me you had Josh Norman up here and you didn't ask Josh Norman, hey, Josh, if I got down on all fours and run after you, could you jump over me? That's a tough question. But you didn't ask them questions, did you, nephew?
So I guess I'm a bull now. All right. Cool. Here's a highlight from our discussion earlier about Mike Tomlin.
That's an old word.
Tomlin's confidence is a byproduct of the head coach and the quarterback being on the same page. It couldn't happen with Bell and Brown on the roster.
It's an indictment on Mike Tomlin for him not being able to manage those personalities to a place where he could make them feel like this is a culture where you would take less to be here.
All right, Uncle Jimmy, your thoughts on Mike Tomlin and whether or not he'll be able to rattle control of these Steelers with Bell and Brown gone.
Well, I don't know what the hell you're talking about with that. Let me put it to you like this. I guarantee you right now Mike Tomlin's happier that he done kicked Dennis Rodman out of his locker room.
Who's Dennis Rodman?
Antonio Brown.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wait a minute.
Dennis Rodman got championships.
Okay, exactly. I'm glad you said that. So let that be a lesson to you, Antonio Brown. If you had half the championships that Dennis Rodman had, your ass still be in Pittsburgh. Hey.
That's simple.
Look here, man, let me tell you something. I think that was half the problem, but let me tell you this. Now, don't forget about Le'Veon Smokey Bell. Last year, Le'Veon Smokey Bell cared more about hanging out with Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson than he cared about being in the NFL. You know they got a podcast called All the Smoke, right?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
Le'Veon cared more about catching all the smoke than he cared about catching passes out the backfield. You understand what I'm saying?
So you agree with me, Tomlin's going to be happier.
Yeah, Tomlin, but let me put it like this. Mike Tomlin was born at night. He wasn't born last night. That brother just trying to hold on to his job, man. Okay? He got rid of them two problem kids.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. The locker room better.
Yeah.
But he still got problems.
It's death.
The death person man. Who disliked him the most is sitting at his dinner table. That's Ben Roethlisberger.
Ooh.
Let me put it to y'all like this. I remember when I used to be a substitute teacher. Okay?
Hold on.
God, you imagine
you
that
was a substitute teacher.
What? Yeah.
What did you teach?
Sex education.
Night school.
The hell y'all laughing about? It's a very serious subject. And they knew when I stepped in there, they took that seriously. I walked in there, man. I see, you know, the two little bad kids sitting in the back. Y'all ain't here to learn. Get your ass up out of here.
A.B.
And A.B. and Le'Veon Bell. Y'all ain't here.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Get your ass on up out of here. Now I got a chance to take over the class, and I get those who want to learn can be there.
Yeah.
The only problem that Mike Tomlin tried that, the only problem is, he got some girl sitting in the front row. She real pretty, but she pregnant.
Stupid.
She cutting eyes at the teacher and everything else. That's a distraction.
Like that nipple.
So that's Ben Roethlisberger, I guess.
Look, man, Mike Tomlin and Big Ben ain't on the same page.
Yeah.
You don't.
So got no choice. All I'm telling is, look here, the end of this season, they're going to be right where they was last year. Missing the playoffs at 9-7. My money's on the Cleveland Browns. See, Cleveland right now, listen to what you said. Pittsburgh got the better locker room. Browns got the better team on the field. They got the talent. Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, Kareem Hunt. I don't like talking about that, but. Hey, man, let me tell y'all something. Listen to me, Marcus. The sanest person in that locker room is Baker Mayfield.
And so you think they're gonna unseat the Steelers?
Mike Tomlin might be happy, but you know what that happen is gonna get him? About third place in AFC North. And it might work out for the best for him. Cause you know what? I think Mike Tomlin will make a hell of a defensive coordinator in Cleveland at the end of this season.
Don't do them all like right, that.
Hey, y'all need to come holler at your boy.
Yeah, find a, find a new outfit for Las Vegas, man. Please, please. Golly.
I got something to show a little bit more.
All right, listen, I'm going to get to my approval rating.
Hater in the house.
From Mike Tomlin.
Come on,
he's up 4 points to a 69. Job performance goes up 3 points.
Job performance? Yeah. What is he doing?
He's done a nice job this offseason.
What, the interviews? Well.
Yeah, the interviews, the whole thing.
He's talking his way up.
17 all-time greatest, 18 character. I moved him up a point. I loved his answers to ESPN.
Yeah.
1 point there. 69 total.
Yeah, not much movement over here is the offseason, but the character, I had to move him up one. Mike Tomlin is trying to own this situation and put a silver lining on it. No one's happy losing talent, but he's still in a good place. He's got command of that locker room. We'll see.
What
you got going on?
I'm headed to Vegas. I don't know about the rest of y'all.
We gotta go.
We will not be here tomorrow. We will be in Las Vegas this Saturday. See you next week.
Own yak bag. You about to go get it.